The Haunted UK podcast is produced and released in stereo. Listening through an environment such as headphones or stereo speakers will ensure you get the best experience.
Hello, lover of things that go bump in the night. This is Dan Cummins.
And I'm Lindsay Cummins.
And we co-host the paranormal horror podcast, Scared to Death. Are shadow people real? What about demonic possessions? Poltergeist activity. Do you believe in ghosts? Malevolent entities? Are aliens real? Could you be abducted?
We don't know, but what we do know is that we have over 230 episodes of stories on our podcast, Scared to Death, exploring all of the possibilities.
Each week, we share several supposedly true stories that have been gathered from around the world and submissions from our own fans of allegedly true tales.
Curious about the paranormal? Just like a spooky story? Do you need more fear to fuel you through your long work days?
Come join us. New episodes of Scared to Death are released every Tuesday night. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you end up scared to death.
Here at Haunted UK Podcast Towers, we're committed to giving you high-quality, great episodes time after time after time. But this takes a lot of effort in research, writing, editing, recording, mixing, mastering, and publishing. We don't have a fancy production company or a bank of scriptwriters or a large budget to keep everything going. We are a fully independent podcast. If you'd like to help the show, then why not get over to Ko-fi and search for the Haunted UK podcast, where you can subscribe to give just £3 per month, the price of a coffee, or as much as you like. If you'd rather not sign up for a monthly subscription, then you can simply make a one-off donation. Again, as little or as much as you like. This really helps the show with our website, Ko-fi membership, merchandise, equipment, as well as other financial commitments. So if you feel that you'd like to help keep the lights burning, the wheels turning, and the stories rolling, then why not consider getting over to Ko-fi and donating to the show? That's Ko-fi and search for the Haunted UK podcast. Thank you. And here are the names of the amazing people who have donated to the show recently. They are Maureen Spiller, Eddie, Julie Connor, Dan and Keris, Valerie Watson, a person with the most amazing name ever, Raven Ford, Alice Brown, and last but not least, Francis Barnbrook. We also now have some amazing and exciting new merchandise available on our website, including mugs, mouse mats, drinks bottles, bags, t-shirts, hoodies, and even bottle openers. Get yourself over to www.hauntedukpodcast.com to check out our Etsy shop. Now, without any further delay, let's get this episode started.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Worried she wasn't well, or something had happened to her, I got out of bed and ran down the stairs, calling her name and asking why she'd returned home so soon, only to find no one in the kitchen. The stairs went straight into the kitchen, and her room was next to it. So I went in, looking for her, but already the hairs on the back of my neck were standing on end. There had been clattering as I descended the stairs.
Brenda?
And these noises were very loud. There was no way she, or anyone else for that matter, could have left the kitchen in that time. What's more, nothing was out of place in the kitchen. Nothing had been moved and quickly dumped, despite the definite sound of cups and things being moved about. I checked her room and the doors, but nothing. Needless to say, my boyfriend and I left very quickly after that. This is episode 50, part one of the Haunted UK podcast. And it's time to hear from you and your stories. For the team at Haunted UK Podcast Towers, this is a bit of a momentous occasion. We've reached the end of Season 5, which is 50 regular episodes. Well, actually when you count the specials, multiple listener stories episodes, as well as short haunts, it's more like nearly 80. But it's still a great target to hit, and we plan to be around for a while yet. Since the show started back in June 2021, we've had hundreds of listener stories, and every single one of them has been fantastic. We can never give enough praise and thanks to all of you out there who have been so incredibly kind enough to share your experiences. They really are a highlight of the entire show. So, coming to the end of another season means that we're here once again. Listener stories. And as always, we have an amazing selection for you to listen to. It's always an absolute pleasure, and sometimes a very frightening experience, to read through all of your stories and to assemble them into these brilliant episodes. So, with that said, it's time to dim the lights, time to get comfortable, and time to listen to your stories. Our first story was sent in by Becky and involves a series of extremely eerie precognitive dreams with similarities which stretch way beyond the reasoning of coincidence, but also roaming in the background of Becky's mind and in her reality, a figure, a stranger, who still appears to her even today. When I was 18 years old, I'd started my second year of college studying holistic therapies, aromatherapy, massage, etc. This had been an interest of mine for quite some time, something that had always fascinated me, but I was very unaware of how this interest would evolve into what you might consider a gift, or a curse. But that's for you to decide. Things started happening 2 or 3 months after my course began. Now, where I was studying was in an odd area of town, I felt, which often made me feel slightly ill at ease. One particular day, I was walking to college and passing an old antique shop, which I'd walked past countless times before. But this time, something felt different. Something made me feel incredibly uneasy. I pushed this aside, thinking nothing of it, and continued my day. That evening, I drifted off to sleep, but I couldn't shake the feeling that a presence of someone or something was in the room with me. In a dream state, I became aware that a man had appeared, medium in stature with dark hair, yet when he showed his face, there were no features, just a very dark demeanor. In the dream, this man appeared to want to guide me somewhere, but unwillingly. Yet I felt a strange sense of protection. This was just the beginning. He turned away and said, "Well, are you coming with me?" I could feel myself shaking, but I followed him with intrigue. My destination still wasn't very clear, as it seemed to jump from one corner of town to the next, then to a European country, before finally coming back to the very shop that I feared earlier that day. Suddenly, I woke up in a panic, with the worst feeling of dread running through my body, because I knew now that I wasn't alone. After that night, strange occurrences began to happen around the house. When alone, I would always feel this presence, a presence that I felt was stalking me now. I began to see movement, sometimes a strange figure out of the corner of my eye, or whenever I looked in the mirror. One particular day, I was sat with my mum and we were just casually watching TV. The family dog was in the room with us too, and everything seemed normal, until we began to hear what sounded like shuffling feet coming from the next room. My mum and I looked at each other with curiosity, and even the dog looked up, but didn't bark or jump down. This was getting a little creepy now, I thought. What with the dream, the feeling of the presence, and now the sound of shuffling feet. Again, another night of getting comfortable and drifting off to sleep, and again, the same dream would come back with every single little detail being identical, apart from one, the addition of a new place to visit, a shop. Now this shop I knew of. It was an old-fashioned toy shop, but the interior looked completely different. It was a little dark inside, but I could see a countertop and cabinets at the back, which had the appearance of an old apothecary. This wasn't a toy shop. It was a pharmacy. I woke up startled, but felt that I was also getting clear, strong messages. On my way to college later that day, I walked past an area with beautiful houses, which I've loved for a while. Gazing at the houses as I went, I found myself drawn to one house in particular, and noticed the number of the house, which was number 11. Okay, I thought, but that means nothing to me. Carrying on, I came to the dreaded antique shop that I hated, and I immediately felt eyes watching me from inside. So it was at this point that I decided to go into this shop after college. I guess I thought I could confront this feeling I had. Finishing for the day and returning back to the antique shop, I cautiously stepped inside. I knew I was being watched and heard a strong name call out to me.
Peter!
There was a sense that I actually knew who Peter was, from a past life or future connection maybe. He seemed to live in what appeared to look like a small caravan yard that was at the back of the antique shop. Could this be a memory or just a vision? I quickly decided that I wasn't going to stick around and instead I'd go to the toy shop. I felt a lovely sense of ease, and remembering my dream, I could place every little detail right down to the pestle and mortar. The same dreams continued, but with slight changes here and there. It was also at this point that I felt the spirit within the family home becoming stronger. Seeing him out of the corner of my eye again and feeling his presence luring over me. But instead of it making me feel uneasy, I felt more comforted. This went on for quite some time. A few years, to be precise. Fast forward a few more years and I'd started dating. My dreams were also manifesting. One particular dream seemed to be based around a date in a coffee shop. The details were so clear, even down to the position of the table where my date and I were seated. I also noticed a group of three ramblers sat behind us at a window seat. So, imagine my surprise when that coffee shop date really did happen. And imagine again that surprise amplified even further when I noticed the same three ramblers sat within the window seat, exactly as in my dream. A year later, and the dating was going well enough for me to tell my boyfriend about the strange occurrences and dreams. These were dismissed and a little pushed aside, so I decided not to speak of them again, until I met my boyfriend's mother. Now, I absolutely did not tell her about the dream straight away, as I felt that this may come across as a little odd, but once I got to know her better, I started to open up to her about them. Anyway, we were all sat around talking about my dreams one day when I noticed that my boyfriend's mum had gone white as a sheet, as if she'd seen a ghost. I thought this a little strange, but continued. I mentioned the toy shop, the fact that it looked like a pharmacy inside, the beautiful houses on that lovely street, and that one particular house I was drawn to, number 11. After I'd finished, my boyfriend's mother explained why she'd gone so pale. She told us that her very own grandfather had a pharmacy, exactly where the toy shop was, and that he also lived in a house, and its number was 11. And this wasn't any house. It was the very same house that I walked past every day. So, is all this coincidence or some sort of spirit guide at work? It seems a little odd that I'm still having what appears to be these psychic dreams. They involve certain developments, people, occurrences, and so forth. One other thing also continues to happen to this day, some 20 years later. The man. The presence of that man I first encountered all those years ago. He still appears before me. But who is he? What is his purpose? Is he there to watch over me? Or is he a ghost or a premonition? A vision of something that is still yet to happen? Will I ever meet this person in my lifetime? Is he actually real? I believe that he could be. Our next story comes from a listener from the other side of the world, Australia. But the story itself is actually based in Tasmania, an island off the southeast coast. Daisy and her family have often taken holidays there, enjoying its beauty and history. But one particular holiday stands out from all the rest. Daisy writes, "I love listening to your podcast and thought I might send you in my story. I actually have two, but I'll keep the other one for later. I was on holiday with my mum in Tasmania in 1996. We've always loved Tasmania and would go there as often as we could, always driving ourselves around to go off the beaten track. We went to a well-known estate in the north, which has a rich history. Most things in Tasmania have a rich history in farming, etc. So, off we went for a look at the old homestead, which would also include a stopover for morning tea. We were in a group of perhaps 10 people, and had gone through the entire homestead room by room, but it was our last stop that was the most impressive room in the house. Previously used as the formal drawing room, it had held receptions for various important people over the years. It was cordoned off almost at the entrance, so as not to have the public trailing through it. It had been restored to its former glory and did look wonderful with its red velvet drapes, huge fireplace, and impressive display of silverware laid out on the huge timber table. My mum and I hung back, so as not to be in the crush of people all wanting to see the same thing at once. And as the others all headed off to go to the tea room, we stepped forward to view the room in full splendor. To this day, I have absolutely no idea what happened, but I was suddenly hit with what I can only describe as a physically overwhelming sadness. It felt like it was literally pushing down on me. I felt so silly, and my mother looked at me for a moment as though I'd taken leave of my senses. Then her face was dead serious, and she asked me what was wrong. I honestly couldn't speak. Then, without any warning at all, I started crying my eyes out. I was in floods of tears and had no idea why. The room was located just inside the front entrance of the house, and I was so embarrassed that I made a dive for the front door and went straight outside. I was still a mess for a couple of minutes when my mum came out and asked if I was okay. Still blubbering away, feeling out of control, I somehow said yes, I was okay, and that I had no idea what was going on. Anyway, through the tears, I urged her to continue with the rest of the group and I'd catch them up. My poor mum wasn't convinced, but off she went, begrudgingly. I sat on the front stoop trying to control myself, and after a few minutes, I seemed to gather my composure. I decided to just sit there for a couple of minutes longer. I was still a little rattled by what had happened. It was then that I looked up and saw a lovely elderly gentleman tending to the rose bushes in the flower beds, about 50 meters away. I noticed he was looking at me, so I waved somewhat casually to acknowledge him. He tipped his hat in return. In places such as this in Tasmania, you often find staff or workers in period dress as part of the charm of the surroundings. I thought he was one such person. I'm not entirely sure how it happened, but in what seemed like the blink of an eye, he was suddenly a lot closer. yet I'd not seen him actually walk in my direction. He again inquired about my well-being, and I said I was most embarrassed and told him briefly what had transpired. He looked at me with a neutral yet soft facial expression and said, "Well, lass, you're not the first, and you won't be the last." He then tipped his hat again and sauntered off around the corner of the building. Strangely, I seemed to feel perfectly fine after this, as though nothing had happened. By this time, I was convinced I was losing my marbles, but went looking for my mum and finally caught up with her and the group. We were in the tea room enjoying the homemade goodies, and I was quietly telling my mum about the lovely elderly gent, and she had a little chuckle and commented the poor old man had probably thought I was a nutter. The next thing I know, the owner of the estate quietly approached us and asked if he could see us outside. We followed him out onto the veranda, and he said that one of the staff had overheard me talking with my mum. I was embarrassed all over again and tried to swat him away, but he drew my attention to a picture in a frame on the wall in the original master bedroom. He asked if the man in the picture was the man I'd spoken with. "Yes, that's him, complete with the flat cap," I said. Long story short, it turns out the gentleman in the picture was from the original family who started the estate in the early 1800s. I must admit, I was extremely skeptical, but upon closer inspection of the picture, there was no disputing it. It was definitely the same man, exactly as he appeared in the picture. When we had spoken at the front of the house, he was as real as any other person. There was no misty air, or spookiness, or transparency. From my perspective, he was a normal, real person, standing right in front of me. The current owner said the man in the picture had appeared to only a handful of people over the decades that he'd been in residence, and often to people who had appeared in distress, just as I was. Every once in a while, he still floats through my mind, and I still have no idea why I had such a crushing feeling, only that it was overwhelming dread. But it was nice of him to see my distress and to try and ease me a little by letting me know it's happened before. I will always return to Tasmania any chance I get, but I have no desire to ever return to that estate again. So there you have it. One of two accounts involving ghostly sightings. Keep up the great work on the podcast. Daisy, North Queensland, Australia. We now move from Australia to Northern Ireland, County Down to be precise, and a story from Phil, who as a teenager may have experienced multiple visitations from a loved one who had sadly passed away. Hi, I recently discovered your podcast and I'm thoroughly enjoying it, so I thought I'd share the story of an event which happened to me. My name is Phil and I'm from Northern Ireland. I consider myself a skeptic, but I've always had a great interest in the paranormal and find people's stories fascinating. While I am a skeptic, I've had an experience which I still cannot explain, even today. Growing up, my family lived with my grandfather in a bungalow in the countryside near the Mourne Mountains in County Down. He was a wonderful man, but for as long as I can remember, he had severe issues with ulcers on his legs, which made mobility an issue. He couldn't walk unaided, having to usually use two wooden sticks, a medical walking frame, or a wheelchair if he was leaving the house. At night, I would hear him make his way to the bathroom, with the slow shuffle of his feet and soft impact of the walking frame's rubber feet on the carpet. I was 13 years old when he passed away, and my parents decided to renovate the bungalow, turning his old bedroom into a second living room. Carpet was removed in the hall and replaced with ceramic tiles. As we lived in the countryside, nights were usually silent, except for the odd passing car. I remember being woken up several times to a sound that I shouldn't have heard. I could hear the shuffling of feet and the soft thud of a walking frame on carpet going past my room. The sound would gradually get quieter as it got further up the hall towards the bathroom. The noise I heard was definitely on carpet. Despite the fact that the carpet was no longer there, having been replaced by tiles. This happened a few times, and every single time, I could never bring myself to look in the hall. Was this a sleep-deprived acoustic hallucination? Or my mind and memory playing tricks, making me hear what was always a comforting sound? Or was it something else? I don't remember being frightened by these events, but they have stuck with me my whole life. Thank you, and keep up the good work. Phil. Heading now to Essex, we catch up with Linda, whose wealth of paranormal experiences is truly extraordinary. There's literally a little bit of everything in here, so without giving anything else away, I'll hand over to Linda. I'm Linda and I live in Essex. I've only recently found your podcast, but I'm catching up quickly on all of the episodes. Whilst I consider myself a believer, I always try to debunk experiences and find some logical explanation within them. I've personally had a few strange experiences, which I'll try to list chronologically. The first experience happened when my family, Mum, Dad, myself and my younger brother moved to a new house. It was June 1988, and it was just before my fourth birthday, and my brother had just turned one. I don't actually remember this happening, but my mum always tells this story, as it really creeped her out at the time. I was in the garden, playing in the sandpit. I'd placed a chair nearby and was chatting and laughing as I played, but there was nobody with me. My mum continued to watch, and I apparently kept looking up, as if there was someone on the chair. She came out and asked me what I was doing. I replied, "Playing with Grandad." He said, "Check the pipes." My mum then told me to come in for lunch, and it wasn't mentioned again. My mum's dad had passed away in 1979, so I'd never had the chance to get to know him. Maybe it was what I'd said while I was in the sandpit, but for whatever reason, my parents did get the pipes checked. And there was a lot of damage, which could have led to a major burst pipe at any time. They think it was my granddad helping out in the only way he could. It was later in 1988 that the smells would start. One would be Golden Virginia tobacco, which has a very distinct smell. It would only be in certain places and would appear from nowhere. If you moved a step to the left or right, you couldn't smell it, but move back, and it was there. It would last around 5 minutes, then disappear as quickly as it had appeared. We also smelt the strong scent of Lily of the Valley, which would only ever waft up in a certain spot by the lounge window, and only ever on a Sunday. There never seemed to be any reason, and we could go months between it happening. Guests have smelt it too, and we can offer no explanation for it. My parents still live there, and it still happens. 1992 was the first time that I ever saw something out of the corner of my eye. Initially, I thought it was our dog going upstairs. I was only 8 years old at the time and wondered what it was. As I stood up, our dog also got up and growled up at the stairs. Immediately, I sat back down. Over the next few years, all four of us would catch a shadow on the stairs. It wasn't until around 1994, though, that we started to hear the footsteps and floorboards creaking in my parents' room above the lounge. It would sound like somebody walking around the edge of their bed to the window. We'd run up the stairs to catch whoever it was, but there was never anyone there. This still happens occasionally too. 2012 now, and I had a daughter, but had separated from her dad. I was living in a small flat above a shop, a couple of miles away from my parents' house. My nan, who I adored, passed away after a few health issues on the 3rd of July. I'd seen her 2 days earlier, and she kept saying, Bill wants me to go to him. Bill was her husband, my granddad, the one who had warned us about the pipes. I told her it was okay to go to him. My birthday is July the 15th, and she would always call me up to wish me a happy birthday in the morning. She lived with her son, my uncle, who had taken her death very hard, as he'd never lived alone before. On the morning of my birthday, my phone rang, and I saw it was from my nan and uncle's landline number. I answered the call, but it was all static and fuzzy. I said hello.
Hello? Hello?
A few times, and then the static faded, and then I heard Linda.
Linda.
In a faraway, echoey whisper. Then the static came back, and the line went dead. I called back, expecting my uncle to answer, but he didn't. It just rang. I tried a few minutes later, but nothing. My mum then called to wish me happy birthday. Then she said my uncle was there and wanted to speak to me. I immediately got goosebumps, because if he was there with my mum, how had I received a call from his landline less than 15 minutes earlier? I asked how long he'd been there for, and my mum said about 40 minutes. Only he, my mum, and I had keys to his house. I do believe it was my nan calling to say happy birthday, and I'm so glad she did. July is a busy month for birthdays and anniversaries in my family, so we didn't have her funeral until the 28th of July. The night before her funeral, I put my daughter to bed as usual. Then I stayed up trying to distract myself from thinking about the horrible day that lay ahead. I decided to go to bed around 11-ish. I got into bed and lay there in the dark, hoping sleep would come, but it didn't. Instead, my door suddenly opened slightly, and a shadow appeared on the ceiling. It moved slowly from the door to the window, and then it was gone. My room was to the side of the flat, so no car headlights reached there. Again, I had no explanation for it, but it felt comforting in a strange way. The next day, I dropped my daughter off, who was only 4 years old, at nursery. I then headed to my nan's house, where the funeral procession would leave from. I saw my cousin, and we started talking. "Strange thing happened to me last night," I said to him, and he quickly fired back, "Me too." My cousin continued, describing how he was lying in bed, when the door opened and shut, and a dark shadow travelled across to the window and disappeared. "That's what happened to me," I told him. We both have no logical reason to explain what this was, and why we would experience the same thing at the same time. But we both thought it was our nan, trying to reassure us that everything would be okay. In 2013, I took my daughter with me to put flowers on my nan's grave. As I was clearing leaves, Evie wandered off, and I could hear her giggling. I turned around and saw her throwing leaves into the air. Now, Evie was diagnosed with autism when she was 3 and didn't speak very much at all until she was around 7. I placed the flowers on the grave and called for Evie to go. She turned and waved and said bye to one of the headstones. I said, "Are you saying bye to Nanny?" She smiled and pointed, saying, "Girl." I was a bit weirded out by this, so went to look where she was pointing, thinking, surely not. The headstone was of a girl who was 6 when she passed away, back in 1887. "Okay," I said, "let's say bye to your friend and go home. Nanny will look after her." And then we left. A few weeks later, she was playing and giggling in her room. I asked what she was playing, and she said she was giggling at, and replied, "Wendy." "Oh, from Peter Pan," I said, but she said, "No, Wendy with Nanny." It took me a few minutes to put 2 and 2 together, so after I'd taken her to school the next day, I went back to the graveyard to take another look at the gravestone Evie was pointing at. And yep, the girl's name was Wendy. We move on to 2014 now, the 26th of May to be exact, and Evie was playing in her room having a party with her dolls. I asked if it was a birthday party and she nodded. I then asked her which doll's birthday it was. "Not doll, Wendy," she replied. I actually felt cold when she said that, as I'd not heard about Wendy for a while. I said, "Happy birthday, Wendy," and left her room. After this, I decided to take some flowers to my nan's grave, but more to check out if it was actually Wendy's birthday. I got to her gravestone, and there it was. The 26th of May, 1881. Wendy's birth date. I left some of the flowers on our grave too, and some on my nan's. Wendy was never mentioned again. 2014 was a big year for us. I had twins, and we moved into a new house a few weeks before Christmas. In 2015, I was about to walk Evie to school with the twins in their pushchair. We got to the garden gate, and I waited for a lady in her late 60s to pass by. She was quite distinctive, wearing a pink jacket and walking her tartan-clad Yorkshire Terrier. She looked to us and said, "Thank you." And then we moved from the gate and started walking away from her. As we got around the corner onto a long road with a secondary school on it, we saw the same lady walking towards us, with the same dog. It was definitely her, and I can even remember Evie saying, "Mum, it's the lady again." There's no way she could have looped around and got ahead of us. There were no connecting roads from that road to the one we were on, apart from at the other end. But she'd passed us not a minute earlier. Even running, she couldn't have got to where she was. And I know she didn't go past us. All I can think of is that there was a glitch in the matrix on that day. 2016 now, and I kept having my t-shirt tugged by something, but only when I was in the kitchen or the garage. My kids were not around when this was happening, but it always felt like a child pulling at me, and it only happened in those two rooms. My partner even felt it a few times too, so it wasn't just me. I also saw a toy car, which was on the kitchen table, move slowly on its own and then stop. It then moved a little more and then stopped again. There were other toys which moved in the kitchen too, and I always felt the presence of a young boy, but I never felt scared. Just before he would pull on my clothes or move a toy, which happened quite frequently, I would always feel an overwhelming sense of sadness. It would only be after he'd made his presence known that the feeling would go. My last experience is a little out of the ordinary, and judging by what you've already heard, that may seem a little difficult to accomplish, but this was very weird. It was a summer evening in 2017, and I was looking out of my bedroom window. It was around 11 p.m., and as I was gazing out at nothing in particular, I saw a fox, which looked like it had mange, run down the road. Now, as with many areas all over the UK, a fox isn't an unusual sight. I watched as it ran behind a car. But when it reappeared again, it was walking on its hind legs in an ape-like manner. It just strolled along as if it was the most natural thing in the world. I called for my boyfriend, but by the time he got to the window, it had disappeared around the corner. I hadn't had a drop of alcohol, and I don't touch drugs. It scared the crap out of me, and after everything that I've experienced, I don't scare easily. I have no clue what it was doing or why it was on its hind legs. My only explanation was that it had hurt both of its front paws, and it was taking the weight on its hind legs. But that thought was soon dashed when I remembered that when it was on all fours, it wasn't limping at all. I don't tell this story much because who would believe it? But at the same time, what would I gain from lying? I know I saw a fox walk like a human that night, and I have no explanation for it. All the best, Linda. Whilst our next story is short, it's still fascinating and describes the moment a young boy witnessed a full-body apparition. Hi there. So this experience happened to me when I was around 6 or 7 years old. At the time, my brother and I were living with my mother, who'd brought us up by herself since we were little. Anyway, I remembered looking out of my bedroom door into the dark hallway of our house one evening, and got the shock of my life when there, right before me, was the ghostly figure of a woman. She was wearing what I can only describe as Victorian-type clothing with a hat. She appeared all in white, with a strange flickering glow to her appearance. With an incisive glare, which I'll never forget, she continued to look straight at me with some curiosity as she slowly turned her head, and with almost one eye still on me, she then proceeded to walk into the family bathroom and disappear. I was too scared to move, so I hid under my blankets until I felt safe enough to go out into my mother's room. Safe to say, this happened nearly 30 years ago now, but it's an experience which has stayed with me since that day. A few years later, we moved to another house, but I never had another experience there, or anywhere else since. I hope you get a chance to read my story on the show. All the best, Nathan Hatton. Our next two stories were sent in by Karen, and while they're both fascinating, the first one is actually an experience involving a time slip. These types of phenomena are extremely rare anyway, so to have listeners who have actually witnessed one and send in their accounts is nothing short of amazing. If you remember, we actually had a fantastic time slip story, which was part of Season 4's Listener Stories episodes, entitled Flight in Time. If you haven't listened to that one, it's a real gem. But back to Karen's stories. Hi Steve. The following story happened in a large shopping centre in the northeast of England, and it all started out as just the usual shopping trip. I had my two young children with me and my husband. It wasn't a particularly busy day at all, and we had just gone to wander around the shops as you do. One minute, I was just standing with the pushchair outside a shop, minding my own business. The next thing I knew, I was dressed in an 18th century ball gown. I could feel the material on my skin, and it was scratchy. It was also very hot, as I was surrounded by other people in a very crushed ballroom. I can remember there being soldiers there, dressed in short red jackets with frogging detail across the front, and they were serving drinks. I also noticed that these soldiers were wearing white gloves, albeit a bit grubby. I can vividly recall trying to make my way through the crowd, and then someone must have said something to me, because in an instant, I was back in the shopping centre. It was a very strange experience for me, and one that I cannot readily explain. I can still sense the heat and the amount of people in that room. I don't know what was on the land before the shopping centre was built, unfortunately, but it would be intriguing to find out. We also have a shadow entity in our house, and I actually bumped into him one day. I'd got up from the couch to go into the kitchen, and bumped into the chest of a person who was considerably taller than me. For reference, I'm 5'3", and I apologized to him, then thought to myself, who the hell am I apologizing to? Everyone is in the sitting room. He still appears now and then, and we can hear him walking along the corridor upstairs from time to time. He's also popped in on my son, who isn't a believer in the paranormal, but even he couldn't explain the black shadow that passed in front of him. My grandson has also seen him by the front door and said he was a large man wearing a black t-shirt and trousers and actually drew a picture of him for us, but I no longer have the drawing, unfortunately. He doesn't bother anyone, and I'm quite happy for him to stay. Our houses were built on land owned by a mining company, so you never know. We may have a miner on our premises. Kind regards, Karen. As if on a red dotted plane journey from an Indiana Jones movie, we go back across to the other side of the world and to New Zealand. Jane describes a few of her own personal experiences, but there was a period in her life when at 20 years old, she moved into a flat with two other friends and experienced something that didn't want any of them to stay there. Ever. So, with this being the last story of this particular episode, it's time to settle back and listen to The Sinister Flatmate. Thanks for your amazing series. I love listening to your show and have just been inspired to send you my personal stories after your most recent Listener Stories episodes. I've had a few odd experiences over the years. I grew up and lived most of my early life in New Zealand, so all of these experiences are from that period. Starting with an old house which I loved and grew up in, where it was a haunting of doors, really. The internal doors would slam shut, mainly in other rooms from the one I was in, but occasionally this would happen in front of me. Maybe it happened when others were there too, but in all honesty, as there were four kids, two dogs and two cats, it was probably overlooked. It was such a noisy and busy environment when we were all there. It was different when I was in the house alone, though. You could hear the doors banging. With no windows open, no drafts, or any other reason I could ever logically understand. I always tried to put this down to the animals. Told myself it was something much simpler. The house never felt sinister, though. In fact, I'd talked to it. But there was one occasion when I was about 14, when I did fly outside after witnessing a glass internal door shut by itself, right in front of me. Needless to say, I didn't go back inside until my family returned home. When I was 18, I believe my grandfather visited me in a dream to say goodbye when he died. I dreamt about him saying goodbye the morning he passed, which was very unexpected and sudden when he was out walking one morning. We found out that it would have been the same time he died when I was having my dream. This was confirmed when we got a call later that morning from my grandmother telling us he'd passed away. A more sinister experience happened in the most eerie place I've ever lived in. It was my first flat, and I was 20 years old. Myself and two girlfriends found a cheap dive in a lovely part of town. Not their real names, I'll call my friends Susie and Brenda. The landlord, an elderly gentleman, lived below us. Because of this, we initially thought that everything that happened was him playing pranks on us, or worse, that maybe he was a bit of a pervert sneaking in when he thought we were out. Two experiences I had completely changed my mind on that opinion, though. One morning, my boyfriend and I were being lazy and chatting in bed. My two girlfriends left for uni, and we heard them clearly call out and say goodbye. About 10 minutes later, we heard very loud clattering noises coming from the kitchen downstairs. One of my friends, Brenda, loved making tea when she arrived home, so I assumed she'd returned for some reason. Worried she wasn't well, or something had happened to her, I got out of bed and ran down the stairs, calling her name and asking why she'd returned home so soon, only to find no one in the kitchen. The stairs went straight into the kitchen, and her room was next to it. So, I went in, looking for her, but already the hairs on the back of my neck was standing on end. There had been clattering as I descended the stairs.
Brenda?
And these noises were very loud. There was no way she, or anyone else for that matter, could have left the kitchen in that time. What's more, nothing was out of place in the kitchen. Nothing had been moved and quickly dumped, despite the definite sound of cups and things being moved about. I checked her room and the doors, but nothing. Needless to say, my boyfriend and I left very quickly after that. The second incident was even worse. I was alone in the house having a shower downstairs. Now, this shower was creepy as hell. We had all got to the point of only taking showers when someone was in the room with us, as we hated it that much. We all felt like we were being watched. This was well before hidden cameras were anything like they are today, so it couldn't have been anything like that. Although we did check for things like peepholes, just in case our landlord was that dodgy, and we may have missed something, but I think it would have been very unlikely and difficult to set up. On this occasion, I was alone when I heard very heavy footsteps in the living room and the bedroom of my other friend, Susie. These sounded like male footsteps. Hard, heavy, pronounced, and they were coming from upstairs, above the bathroom. Being alone and living with girls, I'd left my clothes in my room, so I only had a towel. I have no idea what the hell I was thinking, as I immediately assumed it was a burglar, which made my next action one I would never recommend. But I felt compelled to get clothes at whatever the cost. I ran upstairs in a rage at the idea of someone breaking in. Losing my nerves slightly as I got to the door, I still shouted,
"Is anyone there?"
Only to find no one again. This flat was very small, and there were very little places to hide, but I did look everywhere though, under beds, in wardrobes, etc., all the time feeling strongly like something or someone was watching me. Again, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done, and I was actually lucky it was supernatural. I got dressed extremely quickly and ran out the door, by this stage absolutely terrified. I checked in downstairs and my landlord was still in his flat as I left, so that ruled him out as well. Noises, feelings, the TV randomly changing channels, and other odd things continued to happen, as did the decline of our friendships, right to the point where we all fell out very badly. None of us could tolerate being at home alone though, as it was just way too creepy. One night, my friends just didn't come home at all, as they decided to stay at one of their parents' houses, without including me. Now alone in the flat, I heard noises downstairs, and the TV started playing up again, causing me to totally freak out. I called my boyfriend, who came over and got me. The wait for him is etched in my memory, as it was completely terrifying. I was so worried something would happen. I could feel the overwhelming presence of whatever it was in the room with me. It knew I was scared and that I was leaving. It really felt like it had heard me talking to my boyfriend. I was terrified it was going to do something to really scare me. The atmosphere that this thing gave off when it made itself known felt oppressive, obvious, and it would be like this when any of us were alone. This is what made me think it wanted to scare me. Knowing I had an imminent escape, I was scared it would want to take its chance and make its mark. Fortunately, nothing more happened to me. That evening made me realize I could never go back to that flat. It was also a terrible betrayal in my friendship, as my girlfriends knew what I would face. Fortunately, after my friends and I permanently left the flat, we did make up again, and are very close again still to this day. I don't completely blame the flat for what happened between us as we were young, and Susie and Brenda were managing serious personal issues at the same time. I had a loving relationship, and they later admitted that they were very jealous. But that evil and ominous presence definitely did contribute to the terrible environment that we found ourselves in. But this wasn't the end of what happened in that flat. My friends detailed what happened after I'd left, as things got progressively worse. The stairs I mentioned were right outside my room, and one night, the new flatmate, a close friend of Sarah's, heard someone walk up them, clear as day. No one was there, and this continued to happen on and off over the coming nights. Finally, it all came to a head when Brenda had her two younger sisters staying. They were just young kids and were in my old room. Brenda was downstairs and Sarah was in with the other flatmate upstairs. As I said, this place was tiny and no one could just come and go without being seen and heard. After everyone settled down for the night, the girls all heard what sounded like someone walk right across the living room, from my old room or the top of the stairs to the stereo in the living room. Then the stereo was then switched on. And then sounds of someone flicking between radio stations could be heard. The static and the stations over and over. I still cannot believe the human propensity for a logical explanation, but given the children were in the house, Brenda, Susie and Sarah all assumed one of them was out of bed and mucking around. Brenda went upstairs to deal with them, only to find, yep, you've guessed it, no one around. And just in case they'd performed a magic act and managed to move faster than the speed of light back to bed without being seen, she checked to see if one or both of them had been sleepwalking and checked on them in their room. They were sound asleep and had clearly not moved. This was their last day because upon waking up the following day, all three moved out and stayed with family instead of spending another night in that flat. I've often wondered if the landlord did manage to spy on us or play pranks on us or something else. But if he did, we certainly couldn't figure out how at the time. I've also spoken to others who knew of people who lived there afterwards and discovered that they only lived there for a very short period of time. They all had similar experiences to ours. Noises, sounds of people walking around inside the flat, and their dog would apparently stare at something which was invisible to them, with its hackles raised and barking. As I said, they left a lot faster than we did. Kind regards, Jane Holloway Jones. After an email from myself thanking Jane for the brilliant stories, Jane followed up with another email, which detailed a few more incidents. She continues, "Firstly, the lovely old house which I grew up in, with the doors, was very beautiful, and I was very fortunate to have lived there. It was also one of the oldest houses in the area, which is not terribly old in New Zealand, but by comparison to the others all around, it was old. What I forgot to mention was that my youngest sister, who is 12 years younger than I am, had an imaginary friend when she was about 2 or 3. She talked to this friend all the time, often when we were not in a room. We could hear her from the other rooms and see her from the edge of the doorway, always having what looked like real conversations. She often told us what this imaginary friend told her about us as well. My sister called this imaginary friend Susie, and she would say things such as, 'Susie says not to do that with the doll.' When we sat and played an imaginary tea party or dolls games, she would sometimes tell us to move as Susie was sitting in the place where we were. All this is a well-known story in our family and friends group. I won't mention the real imaginary girl's name, as it will identify my sister. We, my parents and other siblings, were all very, very spooked by this, but tried to laugh it off, and we even all commented at the time that it may be a ghost, but would then sort of try not to think about it too much. We sometimes did ask our sister if Susie was telling her to do things, etc., as we were cheeky older siblings, but while we all laughed, we would half expect an answer that we didn't want to hear. Our sister eventually grew out of it though and cannot recall it at all. It turned out that Susie never told her more than a few grumpy things, preferring to just play as a child. Maybe our sister missed the company of a child her own age, so invented one of her own. Or maybe it was something else. Secondly, back to the sinister flat. My husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, reminded me of the light outside the bathroom. He said it would turn on and off all the time, Again, probably pretty ordinary for an awful dive of a flat. But the switch also switched from up to down. And he can remember that. Also, every time he turned the radio on, it was always tuned to a new station. We were terrible music snobs, so it kept on one station by choice. So, who knows, there may have been someone there who had a secret love of commercial radio and didn't want to let their snobby friends know about it. But going back to the last part of the story, where others experienced it too, it still, even to this day, makes me wonder what was inside that flat. Many thanks, Jane. An absolutely terrifying story. Thank you so much for this, Jane. In fact, this story reminds me very much of our very first short haunt, A Bird Inside, where there also seemed to be an additional unwelcome housemate. Please check this out if you found Jane's story interesting. And that, listeners, is where we'll be finishing this episode. But don't worry, because there are more listener stories episodes to come. More fantastic tales, more shocks, more scares, more intrigue. So until then, just keep in mind that the paranormal can strike out at any time, whether you're in a shopping center or passing an old antique shop, or even just innocently listening to your daughter playing in her room, thinking that she's alone. But is she? It's these types of scenarios that seem so completely normal to us all, but in an instant, they can be turned on their heads. And if that happens to you, then make sure you write your story down and send it into the show, because the next person whose story could feature in a listener's stories episode could be you. Do you have an interesting story which you'd be willing to share with the show? If so, your story could feature in our end-of-season listener stories episodes. Please get in touch with the show via email at contactus@hauntedukpodcast.com, marking the subject as listener story. We're waiting for your stories. As well as coffee, you can also follow the Haunted UK podcast on Twitter @hauntedukpod and on Instagram @hauntedukpodcast. You can also find us on our website at www.hauntedukpodcast.com, where you'll be able to keep up to date with news and announcements, browse and download our episode scripts, get in touch with us, and much, much more. This episode was presented by Steve, produced by Pink Flamingo Home Studio, which you can also find on Instagram by searching for @PinkFlamingoHomeStudio. The script for this episode was edited by Marie Waller Proofreading. For more information about this service, contact Marie at mariewaller.proofreading@gmail.com. For a list of all research sources which we found helpful for the writing of this episode, please see the show's notes. Thank you again for listening to and supporting the Haunted UK podcast. So until the next episode, stay safe and take care.